Welcome to the Science Update Podcast. I'm Bob Hirshon, and this is the podcast for March 8th, 2013.
The Science Update Podcast is produced by AAAS, advancing science, serving society.
About 10 million years ago, enzymes in your digestive tract had a couple mutations, and all of a sudden those mutations allowed those enzymes to oxidize ethanol.
Larvae, when they're infected by parasites, seek out and consume alcohol.
It's highly risky to depend only on one pollinator such as the honeybee.
At one particular time, the seal is half awake and half asleep.
We've tried many different cell types with these materials and with this printer, and they all seem to work quite well.
This week, prosthetic ears from a 3D printer, seals that sleep with one eye open, and the importance of wild insects to the worldwide food supply. Also, insects that arm their offspring with alcohol. But first, Suzanne Bard reports that the history of drinking may go back 10 million years.
Many scientists believe that humans first evolved the ability to digest alcohol around 10,000 years ago, only after pottery, which could hold fermenting alcohol, was invented. But this estimate may be off by millions of years, according to Steve Benner of the Foundation for Applied Molecular Evolution in Gainesville, Florida. He and his colleagues traced the genetic origins of the digestive enzyme that breaks down alcohol back 10 million years. That was when human-like apes, including Ardipithecus, or Ardi for short, began to walk upright on the ground.
They're walking upright so arms and hands are free to carry things.
Things like damaged fruit that had fallen to the ground had been infected with yeast and fermented into alcohol.
And that makes a little bit of sense, right? If you go to South America or Central America and watch monkeys pick fruit off of trees, they're ripe fruits, but they're not overripe. They're fresh. They have not had their husk damaged, so that yeast has not had the chance to infect the fruit. And without yeast, the fruit does not naturally have any alcohol at all. And so it's only when the fruit is going to fall to the ground that the husk will be damaged. If the husk is damaged, South American tree-living monkeys will generally avoid it. But if you're already, you're walking around, you're picking up fruit from the ground, this is fruit that's likely to have had its husk damaged in the fall. It's likely to have had yeast infections, and therefore it's likely to contain alcohol. And so the idea that you were first able to handle alcohol when you first began to walk upright on the ground and collect fallen fruit actually makes some sense. So this is the answer to the age-old question, did Ardi party hardy? And I think the answer to that would be yes.
He says this has implications for human health. If our ancestors were able to metabolize alcohol for millions of years rather than thousands, this lends support to the idea that moderate quantities of wine and beer may have some health benefits. But he says members of some populations have lost their ability to metabolize alcohol, particularly in areas where fallen fruit was uncommon, such as prehistoric North America.
Thanks, Suzanne. In other news, pregnant women are generally discouraged from drinking alcohol to reduce the risk of harm to the fetus. But in the world of fruit flies, concerned parents sometimes deliberately soak their developing offspring in alcohol. Correspondent Justin Warner explains why.
Fruit flies sometimes protect their developing offspring by soaking them in alcohol. That's the conclusion of Emory University geneticist Todd Schlenke and his colleagues. Schlenke notes that fruit flies eat fermented fruit, so they're quite tolerant of alcohol. But tiny parasitic wasps, which prey on the flies, are not.
In our previous work, we showed that fly larvae, when they're infected by parasites, seek out and consume alcohol as a means of raising their blood alcohol levels so that they can kill the parasites in their blood. In the current paper, we're showing that adult flies, when they sense parasites in their environment, will change where they lay their eggs, and they'll start laying their eggs in more alcoholic environments, which protects their larvae.
Schlenke's team proved this by creating a controlled environment in a cage.
And in that cage, we had two petri dishes filled with fly food, one of which contained 6% alcohol by volume, and one of which had no alcohol. So we put the flies in the cage and see which dish they decide to lay their eggs on. And when there's no wasps in the cage with the flies lay most of their eggs on the non-alcoholic food. But when wasps were in the cage with them, the flies laid most of their eggs on the alcoholic food.
He says there's a cost to this strategy, since eggs laid in high alcohol environments produce 20% fewer healthy adults. But clearly, in some circumstances, this must be less destructive than the wasps.
Thanks, Justin. Without insect pollinators, many agricultural crops would fail. Most people know that domesticated honeybees are important crop pollinators, but according to new research published in the journal Science, wild insects are better pollinators than honeybees, and their presence in agricultural fields can double crop yields. Agricultural engineer Lucas Garibaldi of Argentina's National University of Rio Negro led the study. He says wild insects and honeybees work together to boost crop yields.
It's highly risky to depend only on one pollinator such as the honeybee.
That's in part because honeybee populations have been decreasing in recent years, perhaps due to stress, pathogens, and disease. But wild insects have also been suffering. Garibaldi says that in order to reverse downward trends in crop yields, farmers should protect wild insects by rotating crops frequently, restoring natural areas within farmland, and using care when applying pesticides. Next, 3D printers haven't yet matched the sophistication of the replicators found on Star Trek, but as Suzanne reports, they're being used to recreate some amazing things.
That's right, Bob. For instance, the lab of biomedical engineer Larry Benasser at Cornell has successfully reproduced a human ear with a 3D printer. To do so, his team took 3D photos of an ear and created a printable computer model. He says collagen serves as a sort of ink.
And we encapsulate ear cartilage cells in this collagen. And then we can dispense that material either out of a printer or inject it directly into a mold that's in the right shape.
It then takes several months for the cartilage to grow and replace the collagen. The ultimate goal is to help people whose ears have been damaged or children born with underdeveloped ears.
Really, the primary motivation is to treat children with a condition called microtia. This is a congenital defect in which children are born without the outside of the ear. And it's actually quite challenging for these kids, even though there frequently is not any hearing deficit. It's very visually striking, and these kids often have a lot of trouble in school and a lot of trouble in social interactions. So what we're hoping to do is provide to a plastic surgeon a shaped piece of cartilage that's in a matching shape to the child's other ear, and that this can be directly implanted without the need for any kind of harvest surgery.
So far, they've successfully implanted the ears in rats, and they hope to implant them in humans within 5 years.
Thanks, Suzanne. When in the water, fur seals sleep with only half of their brain. The other half is awake, with one eye open, scanning for predators. This according to University of Toronto biologist Jennifer Lapierre.
When they go to sleep in water, they sleep like a cetacean, a whale or a dolphin, in that they show unihemispheric or half sleep, in that one brain hemisphere will sleep while the other brain hemisphere will be awake, and then it will switch so that at one particular time, the seal is half awake and half asleep.
She and her colleagues, John Peaver and Jerome Siegel, have figured out how the seals do it. They found that while one side of the brain was awake, levels of a brain chemical called acetylcholine were high. The chemical is thought to be involved in behavioral arousal.
So where we had a high level of brain activity, we had a high level of acetylcholine, so in the waking side of the brain, and the sleeping side of the brain had a low level of acetylcholine.
On land, the seals sleep with both sides of their brain, in part because they have more places to hide and can afford to be totally asleep.
When fur seals sleep on land, they sleep like you or I or your pet dog or your pet cat.
She says the research could help illuminate human sleep disorders. Well, that's all we have for you this week. Next week, we'll have more fascinating science stories for you. But if you can't wait that long, tune in to the Science Update Podcast Daily Edition every day, Monday through Friday. You can find it on our website, scienceupdate.com, or at iTunes. You can also check out Science Update's fan page on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. And if you have a science question, give us a call at 1-800-WHY-IS-IT. If we use your question, we'll send you a Science Update mug. Thanks for listening. I'm Bob Hirshon for AAAS, the Science Society.